Lima was the duty call he made between meetings. As Harry was leaving, Simon walked in, and Blaze introduced them. Harry observed him with interest, and then Simon went to find Salima, who had gone to her room. He said goodbye to Harry and disappeared.
"Wow, nice-looking young guy, Blaze. Your new boyfriend?"
He smiled at her with a lascivious grin, and she was even more annoyed. "No, Salima's monitor from school."
"You can have some fun with him," he commented. "I can really see you with a younger guy. You look great for your age, and you have more energy than anyone I know."
"He's here for Salima," she said dryly. It was none of his business.
"When is she going back to school?"
he asked as they waited for the elevator. "When they reopen, probably sometime in January." She didn't like thinking about it. She didn't want Simon or Salima to leave, and wish they never would.
"That'll be a lot easier for you," he said sympathetically. "It must be hard having her home."
"It's wonderful. It's not hard at all," she said as the elevator came, and he disappeared into it with a wave and wished her Merry Christmas. And as she watched the doors close, she wondered how she could have been married to him. He was such a lousy father, and a total zero as a human being, no matter how intelligent he was. She was still looking unhappy about it when she went back to her office to do some work. Simon stopped by to see her after he left Salima in her room, talking to friends on Facebook as usual. Blaze looked up and smiled at him when he walked in.
"Nice-looking man," Simon said about Harry, but he hadn't liked him.
He knew how little attention he paid to Salima and how sad she was about it. He was successful, handsome, and charming, but to Simon that wasn't enough. And Simon thought it unforgivable that Harry had detached from Salima at 3 when they diagnosed her with diabetes. He had heard it from both her and Blaze. "He said the same thing about you. He asked if you were my new boyfriend."
"Well, that's direct, anyway. Maybe he should talk to my mother."
"He's so cold, Blaze. I can't see you with a guy like him." He had been puzzled by him, and couldn't imagine him connected to Blaze or anyone. He was all about himself, and it showed.
"Neither can I. I was impressed by him. He's brilliant, and I was very young. I was 25 when we met, and he was the same age I am now. I married him a year later, and a year after that the network moved me to New York, so we only lived together for a year. Our time together was pretty irregular after I moved. We were both married to our careers. We weren't even planning to have kids. Salima was a slip, a fortuitous one, it turns out." She smiled at him. "Harry has no idea what a gift she is." Simon had seen that, and he nodded. "He wouldn't even let her sing for him. Sometimes he really is a shit." She shook her head and went back to work, and she was relieved to see at dinner that Salima didn't look upset. Her father always disappointed her, so she was used to it. She had recovered very quickly. Disappointment was the only relationship she'd ever had with him. A big box arrived from Chanel that night. It was a Chanel backpack from Harry with a note. "Merry Christmas. You can use this when you go back to school." It was beautiful, though not really her style, but at least he had tried. "I can use it for my music," Salima said happily, touched by the gift. And she could tell that he had picked it instead of her mom.
He had actually called the store, spoken to a sales girl he knew, and told her to pick something for his daughter and put it on his charge. He had no idea what she'd sent. Salima texted him that night to thank him, but he was on the plane to St. Bart's by then and didn't respond. They were all tired that night, and Salima went to bed early. Blaze was tired too, and said she felt fluish after the long trip a few days before. For once, she wasn't her usual energetic self, and she was already half asleep when Simon came in later that night. He snuggled up next to her, sleepy too. He had done a lot of errands with Salima that day. She was looking for one last gift for her mother, and had dragged him to every store. And after that, they'd gone grocery shopping at the supermarket, and then checked out a new stereo. They made love, even though they were both tired, and Blaze muttered something about getting up to check Salima, as she did every night. She was always fine,
but Blaze liked to be sure there was no glitch with her pump, and she just felt better if she saw her one last time before she went to bed. And she had made Simon do it while she was away, which he had. But before she could force herself to get out of bed that night, she was sound asleep, and Simon passed out just as fast. Their lovemaking had put him in a daze. And the following morning, Saturday, they overslept. It was daylight when they woke up, and Blaze was horrified to see that it was 10 o'clock. She wanted to get Simon out of her room before Salima found them there. At least Teresa didn't come in on the weekends, and by now Salima could make her own breakfast. The house was quiet when Blaze peeked out and looked down the hall. Salima's door was closed, which meant she was asleep too, and Simon ran back to his room on silent feet. He could tell when he ran through the kitchen that Salima hadn't gotten up. There was no sign of her having eaten. No cereal boxes on the table or dishes in the sink, and he was relieved. He hoped she hadn't gone looking for him and wondered where he was. He went to take a shower and was just drying off when he heard Blaze calling him from the other end of the apartment. She raced to his room then, still in her nightgown, and told him with a look of panic to call 911. "Salima's unconscious," she said breathlessly and ran back, and they both guessed what it was. She was in a diabetic coma. She hadn't eaten, and Blaze suspected that her pump had somehow failed. She had never woken up. A failure of her pump had never happened before, though Blaze was always afraid it would. Simon called, and then jumped into his jeans while he was still wet, pulled on a t-shirt, and ran to Salima's room with wet hair and bare feet. Blaze was sitting with her, alternately touching her cheeks and stroking her hair, and shaking her and trying to revive her. Salima was deathly pale, and her lips were blue, as tears ran down Blaze's cheeks and she talked to her. Salima showed no sign of life, but Blaze had made sure that she was breathing. She was racked with guilt as she looked at her. It was the first time in years that she hadn't checked on her when she was home. And within 5 minutes, the paramedics were there. They gave her insulin immediately, put her on a stretcher, and rushed her to the ambulance waiting downstairs. Blaze literally tore off her nightgown, hastily put on the slacks and sweater she'd worn the day before, pulled on boots, and was out the door with her handbag and uncombed hair. They were taking her to Columbia Presbyterian, and Simon shouted that he would meet her there as the door closed. He could hear the siren screaming as the ambulance drove away, and he could just imagine what was going through her mind. It was going through his as well. They had been making love the night before when Salima almost died. The doorman hailed a cab for him as soon as Simon got downstairs, and after promising to pay him double, the cab driver got him there in 12 minutes, which was heroic. Simon gave him $2 $20 bills and ran into the emergency room and asked for Salima Stern. She used her father's name. He was told she had just been taken to the ICU. He followed the nurse's directions and looked for Blaze in the maze of hallways and treatment rooms. And he found her finally in a cubicle with 2 doctors and 3 nurses. Salima was still unconscious, and Blaze was sobbing in the corner as Simon put an arm around her and she shook him off. There were tears in his eyes, too. And a moment later, the doctor asked them to wait in the waiting room. Simon followed her in silence, and they were alone in the ICU waiting room. Blaze was grateful that no one else was there when she turned to look at Simon with a combination of guilt, anguish, and hatred. The hatred was for herself. "Do you realize what we did? We made love last night, and I never got up to check her. I was too goddamn tired from having sex, and I went to sleep. Her pump failed, the catheter disconnected under her skin, and she had no insulin all night." They had told her that Salima had diabetic ketoacidosis, which could be fatal, although it was a very rare occurrence. "She could have been dead by the time we found her, and she could still die," Blaze said, sobbing. "She was dying, and we were screwing." "We weren't screwing," he said in an equally anguished tone. And he felt guilty, too. "We were making love. Christ, Blaze, we're human. You're allowed to fall asleep once in a while. It could have happened even if we didn't make love. It can happen. I saw it with a kid with a pump at school. You take better care of her than I've ever seen." Not last night. She looked daggers at him, and then collapsed onto the couch. He didn't dare approach her, and sat down across the room. Do you want me to go? He asked, gently. I will if you want me to. She shook her head in answer and burst into tears again, and Simon went to comfort her, and she melted into his arms in grief. Simon, we killed her, she said, sobbing. What if she dies? He was praying she wouldn't, and he just sat there and held Blaze for the next hour until the chief resident walked in. He took off his mask and peeled off his gloves, and he smiled at them both. She's going to be okay. She's conscious. She gave us a hell of a scare, but she's a strong girl. And don't blame yourselves. These things happen. For a kid with type 1, she's in remarkably good health. I can tell you're doing a great job with her. You can't watch everything or predict this kind of problem, even if you watched her all the time. The catheter just slipped out. Once in a blue moon, it happens. I always check her at night before I go to bed, Blaze said, sobbing from relief now. And Simon was crying too. It had been a nightmarish morning, and it was only noon. Judging from her levels, my guess is that she lost the catheter delivering insulin early this morning, so even if you'd checked her, say, at midnight, it wouldn't have made a difference. But you definitely found her just in time. I wouldn't have liked to see her go without much longer than she did. You did all the right things, he reassured them both. And Simon looked even more relieved than Blaze. He had been feeling terrible about what had happened and his part in it. Can we see her? Simon asked, even before Blaze. Of course. I'd like to keep her overnight just till we get all her levels straightened out. She's going to be fine, he said again, and Blaze hurried to see Salima, with Simon right behind her. Salima was pale, and she looked like she'd been hit by a bus, but she was smiling when they entered the cubicle again. The worst was over. But they all knew that slipping into a diabetic coma or winding up in insulin shock were risks she'd have to manage all her life. It was why Blaze had put her at Caldwell, because she couldn't face worrying about her all the time and living at the edge of a cliff, especially if she was away. And Salima was so young then. Now, at least, if something went wrong when she was awake, Salima was able to recognize the signs and tell someone if she didn't feel right. But this time, it had all happened while she was asleep, so she didn't know herself. You scared the hell out of me, Blaze said as she bent to kiss her, and Salima smiled as Simon stood just behind Blaze. Sorry I scared you guys, she said in a hoarse voice. I woke up feeling weird in the night, but I thought I was getting the flu and went right back to sleep. I guess the catheter was already out and I didn't know it. Blaze knew she still wasn't feeling well when she didn't insist on going home right away. Salima hated hospitals, but she needed to be there now, at least for a day, until she recovered from the shock to her system. She could easily have died, and Blaze was so grateful she hadn't. She thought about calling Harry to tell him what had happened, but she knew there was no point. He didn't care. They sat with her for a little while, and then the nurse told them that they couldn't stay continuously in the ICU, and Salima needed to get some sleep. Her color was already better, and Blaze was relieved as she kissed her again and promised to be back in a few hours. Bring my laptop and my iPod, she told Simon, and he grinned. She was obviously feeling a lot better than when she came in with the siren screaming. She had youth on her side. With pleasure. He was beaming when he said it. He was so relieved. Blaze left all her numbers at the nurse's station, and the nurse took down the information and then looked up at Simon. Your daughter's going to be fine, she reassured them again. Would you like to leave your numbers too, or just your wife's? The nurse asked, and Simon stared at her, not sure what to say. It seemed complicated to explain that he wasn't Salima's father, and Blaze wasn't his wife. He hesitated for a moment before he answered. Just my wife's will be fine. We'll be together, and we'll be back in a couple of hours. Call us immediately if she has a problem. She's all right now. We just want to get her levels regulated, and she needs to rest. She can go home tomorrow. The doctor had already told them, and they thanked her and left. They both looked like they'd been in a car wreck. I must really look like shit, Simon said to Blaze in the elevator. She thought I was old enough to be Salima's father. I feel like I am. I must look like her grandmother, or yours, Blaze said with a tired smile. It hadn't even occurred to the nurse that they weren't a couple. She terrified me when I found her, Blaze said, still shaken by it, and then she looked at him sadly. I'm sorry I blamed you for this, even indirectly. I felt so guilty that we'd been making love and she was dying. So did I, he admitted, even though they both knew now that it had happened later, after they might have checked. But the reality that she had almost died had hit them both like a bomb. Blaze was infinitely grateful she hadn't, and so was Simon. I'm sorry if I was mean to you, Blaze said sheepishly as they left the hospital, and he stopped walking and looked at her. You thought your kid was dying, and I was the guy screwing you last night, as you put it. You had every right to get mad or freak out and blame me. I would have done the same thing. You get a pass. He put an arm around her then, and they hailed a cab at the curb. They went back to the apartment and climbed into Blaze's bed and just clung to each other. He could feel that Blaze was shaking. They didn't make love this time, and held each other, silently thanking God that Salima was alive. Salima came home the next day, and she was tired but felt almost normal again. The doctor had said it might take another day to feel entirely like herself, and he suggested she stay at home without running around. She didn't even feel like singing or practicing, which was a sign that she wasn't fully recovered from what had happened. And she went to bed when they got home. She said she was just tired. Simon called Luciana to cancel Salima's lesson that day, and she was shocked and burst into tears. She was still crying after Simon explained it all and they hung up. He went to make them lunch, while Blaze kept Salima company in her room. She didn't need supervision, but Blaze was so relieved to have her home that she didn't want to leave her. Blaze was sitting on the foot of the bed when Salima looked in her mother's direction. Can I ask you something, Mom? Sure, sweetheart, what is it? Salima had a serious look on her face, as though she were about to ask an important question, and Blaze had no idea what was on her mind. It was nice of Simon to come to the hospital with you, she said quietly. I like him a lot, Mom. When you guys left, the nurse thought you were my parents. I thought it was funny at first, and then I wondered about something. Maybe you two looked like my parents, or acted like it in some way for them to think that. Mom, are you dating Simon? I mean, you know, I know you guys don't go anywhere together. I mean, like, are you in love with him, Mom? Are you a couple? It was a big question, and she could see that Salima wanted an answer. They had been careful not to let Salima know about their relationship. Blaze still wanted time for them to get used to it before they told her. But they had just run out of time. Kind of, Blaze said honestly. It's very new. It just happened since Thanksgiving. It's only been a few weeks. Is it serious? I don't know yet. We're trying to figure it out. I like him a lot. And then she decided to be more honest with her than she'd just been. I love him. I just don't know if it's the right thing for both of us. Simon should be with someone closer to your age than mine. I don't want to deprive him of that and everything that goes with it. You mean like babies? Yes, among other things. He's 15 years younger than I am. That's a lot. She was looking intently at her daughter. Salima didn't seem upset. She looked puzzled. I kind of suspected something was happening. How? How could a non-sighted person be aware of the subtleties of a budding relationship that had only just happened? Salima always amazed her. There are a lot more silences than there used to be. You must be looking at each other or holding hands, kissing or something. She smiled at her mother. Blaze smiled back at her, and then her face grew serious again. How do you feel about it? Salima was silent for a long time and looked like she was thinking. I'm not sure. I really like him. I'm not used to sharing you with anyone, and that might be weird. Or it could be nice, too, when you're busy. He's good company and he's smart. Blaze couldn't help smiling again. That's how I feel about him, too.
Is he cute?
Salima grinned at her.
Very.
Are you shocked? About us, I mean?
A little.
But I guess you have a right to someone in your life. And I think I kind of like it that he's younger. It's more fun for me. That was one aspect Blaze hadn't thought of.
Well, we'll see what happens.
We might get tired of each other by the time you go back to school, she said lightly. She wasn't going to tell her any more. That was more information than she needed. She knew enough now, and Blaze was relieved that she had no serious objections. And she felt better being honest with her. She thought Simon would prefer it too. In the end, it was a blessing. Her pump failing had been terrifying, but they had come through the crisis together. And now Salima knew that her mother was in love with Simon. A lot had happened in 24 hours. But Salima was looking troubled again. She had something to tell her mother, and she'd been waiting for the right time. She hoped this was it.
I don't want to go back to school, she said softly. I want to stay here and take lessons with Luciana. She helped me apply to Juilliard for September, she confessed. She's going to write me a recommendation, and she could help me get ready for my audition.
She couldn't see her mother's face, but she was praying that she'd agree. She had outgrown living at Caldwell, and they both knew it.
We'd have to figure out who would take care of you when Simon goes back.
Can't he stay? Salima sounded worried. She was used to him now, and he was great with her. She still missed Abby, but she did a lot more with Simon, and she had grown up immeasurably in the past 2 months, and could do more for herself than she ever had before. And she liked it.
I don't know, Blaze answered honestly. I think he has to finish out his contract, at least till the end of the school year. They might let him quit, but he'll have to want that too. Let's not worry about it now. We haven't even heard from school about when they're going to reopen. What about your college classes? Don't you want to finish that?
Salima shook her head. She was sure.
I want to study music.
And Blaze knew she had never been happier than since she'd started studying singing with Luciana.
Well, we have a lot to think about, don't we?
Blaze said, and reached out to pat Salima's hand.
Is that a yes?
Salima pressed her, and Blaze laughed.
It's a strong maybe, she said honestly.
But Salima could hear that her mother wasn't against it.
I really want to get into Juilliard, and I like living at home with you.
I love having you at home, too. She had been gone for long enough. Too long. 11 years. And she was great company. But what Blaze would need to make it work was someone to take care of her when Simon left to go back to Caldwell. He would have to finish out the school year when they reopened.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's try to figure all this out after Christmas.
Will Simon stay with us if he leaves Caldwell? I mean, like, live with us? Salima looked intrigued by the idea.
Maybe. I'd like that. It's up to him.
Have you asked him to? She was curious about them now.
Not yet, Blaze laughed, just as Simon walked into Salima's bedroom carrying a tray.
Am I interrupting anything? He asked. He could see that they'd been having a serious conversation, but both mother and daughter looked pleased.
I was telling Salima about us, Blaze said quietly, and for a minute he looked as though he were going to drop the tray.
Actually, she guessed when the nurses thought you were her father.
I think it would be nice for you both, Salima said generously. What's for lunch?
She clearly wasn't having a problem with it, and Simon looked relieved.
Caesar salad and an omelet. I'll do better tonight. But let's check your blood glucose and adjust the bolus before you eat.
Okay, Salima said, sitting up in bed and smiling at him, as he set the tray down on her desk and took care of the necessary routines. Salima was used to it.
Just think, if you stay with me and Mom, we'll have great food all the time, she said when she was ready to eat.
I'm sure that's the only reason your mom wants me, he said, smiling at Blaze. He set the tray down next to Salima and touched her hand so she would know it was there. Our lunch is in the kitchen, he said to Blaze, and after kissing Salima again,
She told her they'd be back in a little while. Salima grabbed her iPod then and put the earpiece in. "Have a nice lunch," she said to her mother, as Blaze followed Simon back into the kitchen. "How did that go?" Simon asked her, as they sat down at the kitchen table. He had made the same for them and had covered it to keep it warm. "Amazingly well. I think she was startled at first, but not really surprised. She said she suspected it."
"She's very sharp,"
Blaze nodded. "And she likes you. A lot. She isn't bothered by the difference in our age at all. She doesn't want to go back to Caldwell. She wants to stay and go to Juilliard in the fall." He wasn't surprised to hear it. He knew Luciana had been lobbying heavily for the school.
"How do you feel about it?"
"I think it's the right thing for her. She's too old for Caldwell, and she loves her singing lessons. Juilliard would be good for her."
"Are you willing to keep her at home?"
"Only if I can find someone for her after you leave. I can't take care of her alone. I'm out all day, and I travel too much."
"We'll figure it out, please.
Right now, let's just eat lunch." They had covered a lot of ground in 2 days. They had hit some heavy bumps, but were closer than ever. And their relationship had come out of it unscathed. They had told Salima about their relationship, and she didn't object to it. And she wanted to drop out of school, stay home, and study music. It was a lot to digest. Simon leaned over and kissed her, and they dug into their omelets. And for now, everything seemed to be on track. Chapter 12. The Christmas that Blaze, Simon, and Salima shared was perfect. They all loved their presents and opened them on Christmas Eve after a delicious dinner. They went to midnight mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral, and as she always did when she went to church now, Salima lit a candle for Abby. It was hard to believe she'd been gone for almost 3 months. Salima knew she'd never forget her, but so much had changed in Salima's life since she died. It made it seem like much longer. They stayed up late that night, and Blaze put Salima to bed, and afterward she found Simon already waiting in her bedroom. He thanked her for the beautiful Christmas and the lovely presents, and he had given Blaze a narrow gold bangle to wear with the one she always wore now from Dubai. She loved Simon's more. He had had a message engraved inside. "Merry Christmas. I love you. S." And she had given him a watch. It was a Rolex he could wear every day, and he loved it. And she loved the ivory bangle from Salima, too. And Salima loved all her gifts. Simon had recorded some wonderful music for her and made a number of CDs compiled from his own music collection. The next morning, Simon made them an enormous breakfast, including the homemade whole wheat waffle Salima loved with the diabetic maple syrup. He had given her her own waffle iron for Christmas, along with a stack of books in Braille that she wanted to read. They were just finishing breakfast when Simon's cell phone rang. He grabbed it from where it was sitting on the counter, and Blaze saw him frown as he answered. She knew instantly it was Megan. He sounded tense when he told her they were eating, and then he paused for a long time as he listened. And as he did, he left the kitchen and stayed on the phone and walked back to his room. Blaze made idle chit-chat with Salima after he left and tried not to sound as distracted as she was. She could tell that whatever Megan was saying, she must have been upset about something, and Simon had looked worried when he left the room. "Something wrong, Mom?" Salima asked her. She could hear the tension in her mother's voice, and Blaze didn't want her to know that she was upset, nor that Simon had been involved with a teacher at school. He didn't want Salima to know, and Blaze had promised him she wouldn't tell her. His affair with Megan was a breach of school rules, and he was embarrassed by their situation. Romances among faculty members were frowned on, but inevitably some occurred. But he didn't want Salima to know he had spent 3 years with a married woman. He was ashamed. "No, I'm fine," Blaze lied to her as they talked about what to do that afternoon. Christmas was always a casual day for them, usually spent in pajamas, watching old movies or football, and Simon had promised to make them his famous turkey hash from turkey left over from the night before. It was a full 20 minutes before Simon walked back into the room, and he pretended to be cheerful and said nothing about the phone call until Blaze was alone with him.
What happened?
She couldn't wait to ask him. She was nervous about the call and how long it had been.
Nothing. She just wanted to wish me a Merry Christmas, and she was upset because her middle son broke his arm.
Simon sounded concerned and had already told Blaze he loved her sons. They hadn't lied to him. She had.
Did his father hurt him?
Blaze asked, looking worried about a child she didn't know.
No, he fell off his new bike,
Simon said, and seemed uncomfortable. Blaze had the distinct impression that he didn't want to discuss Megan with her.
Anything else?
She didn't know why, but she had the feeling there was more, and he took a moment to answer.
No, it was fine,
he said vaguely, and loaded the dishwasher. Blaze walked over to him and kissed him then. The look on his face reminded her of when Andrew called her. She could see the pain in Simon's eyes.
I love you,
she said simply, and put her arms around him.
I love you too,
he said sadly. And then he kissed her, and she thought she saw tears in his eyes. But he said nothing more about Megan, and they spent the rest of the afternoon reading the paper, relaxing, and watching football on TV, until Simon went to start dinner and produced the promised hash. And he was in better spirits by then, and had recovered from Megan's call. She was the ghost of Christmas past, or at least Blaze hoped so. The three of them had a good time at dinner. They were still being circumspect around Salima and didn't want to shock her. She had no idea that Simon spent every night in her mother's room, and Blaze didn't tell her. She didn't need to know. When she and Simon went to bed that night, they agreed that it had been a lovely Christmas, their first. She said something about it, and he was quick to correct her.
The first of many.
I hope so, she said softly. He slept in her arms that night, and all she could hope was that he wasn't dreaming of Megan. Blaze was off for the week between Christmas and New Year, and she spent time with Salim and Simon. They went to concerts and out to dinner and took Salima skating in Central Park. She loved it. The three of them had a great time together, and Salima went to two recitals at Juilliard with Luciana and met some of the students. She came back more excited than ever about the school and could hardly wait to audition. The time flew by, and Blaze's vacation ended all too quickly. The first 2 weeks of January were totally crazy for Blaze once she went back to work. She had three major trips planned, one to California and two to Europe, and each of them only for a few days. And as always now, Teresa stayed at the apartment to help Simon with Salima, and each time Blaze returned, he was thrilled to see her. And by mid-month, she was exhausted. She was traveling too much, but the interviews she was doing were important. All of her recent ones had already been aired and had done well. And the night she got home from her last trip, Susie Quentin's live special was on with her interview with the First Lady. It had been the talk of the network for weeks. Blaze sat down to watch it with trepidation, and Simon joined her a few minutes later right before it came on. He didn't want to miss it either. He knew how nervous Blaze was about it. Andrew had sent Blaze a text about it, as though she wouldn't know it would be on. She particularly wanted to see it, to see how stiff her competition was. This was the big opportunity the network had given Susie to shine, and Blaze knew that if Susie did well with it, her own future could be impacted. A star could be born that night, if Susie knocked their socks off. Blaze knew she would be fighting for her position at the network every day from then on. It was tough enough as it was, without adding more pressure. Blaze looked intent and tense as Susie and the First Lady came on from a sitting room at the White House. The interview opened with Susie explaining who she was and saying how happy she was to be at the White House with the First Lady, which Blaze told Simon she thought was hokey. No one cared who the reporter was, she explained, especially at Susie's stage of the game. They were just a vehicle to draw out their subjects and ask the questions everyone wanted to know. She was the mouthpiece for the viewing public, their alter ego. But she had a massive ego of her own, and it leaped at the viewers right through the TV. She was all about Susie,
and eventually addressed the First Lady. Her first question was inane. Her second one was worse. And for her third one, she made a blunder and asked the First Lady how she had liked living in Virginia before the White House, and what that time had meant to her. The question was only interesting because the First Lady had never lived there. Her predecessor had. Susie was an administration late.
"Oh, my God," Blaze said, wincing. "How did she manage to screw that up? And who the hell did the research?"
The First Lady looked confused on the air. Simon was amused by the flow of editorial comments from Blaze. Susie then went on to ask her if she thought her husband had ever had an affair. Blaze nearly choked and stared at the TV in disbelief. She had done nothing to warm up her subject and put her at ease. So far, she had bored her, made a ridiculous mistake about her living in Virginia, and had just embarrassed her on primetime national TV in front of millions of people. The First Lady did not look pleased, to say the least. She looked poised, but pissed. And Susie was clueless as she waited for an answer to her question. The current president was a seriously religious man who was known for his moral standards and puritanical values. He might have been a hypocrite, but Blaze didn't think so, and his wife sure as hell wouldn't admit it if he was. He was a very straight-laced man, and all Susie had accomplished was seriously angering the president's wife, who looked stunned after Susie asked the question and quietly answered, "No."
"I'll say one thing, she's got balls," Blaze said about her rival.
She was beginning to look seriously foolish, and Blaze nearly fell off the couch when she asked the First Lady if she'd ever had an affair herself. She was turning her special into tabloid TV, and had copied Blaze's occasional harsher, controversial edge without the judgment, brains, and charm.
"Oh my God," Blaze groaned with both hands on her head. "She belongs in an institution. Is she nuts?"
The First Lady was sealed up tight as a drum after answering no to that question, too, and the interview might as well have ended there. From then on, she answered in monosyllables and fielded every question as she'd been taught to do by experts. The questions droned on after that, and Blaze wondered how much more the First Lady would take. Susie had the guts to ask her if she had smoked dope in college, to which she answered no again, and then, looking at her sympathetically, Susie asked her if her husband left her and she was suddenly no longer the First Lady, what would she do? The First Lady responded that the question was irrelevant and waited for the next one, with the look of someone who had been publicly betrayed. Susie then outdid herself on the next one, as Blaze held her breath and waited. Susie said she understood that the First Lady had a gay brother, and how did she feel about same-sex marriage? And with that, the First Lady smiled at her graciously, carefully unclipped her mic off the lapel of her stylish black suit, stood up, and walked off the set as Susie stared at her in amazement. It had never occurred to her that that could happen, and it never had before. It was a first, and it never happened to Blaze once in her career with any subject. She always respected them, even when she asked tough questions. But Blaze's were questions in the context of their politics and careers, not about their spouse's extramarital affairs or gay relations, geared to the sensational with no useful purpose. She never went too far. Unlike Susie, who had burned all her bridges and torched her career in just under 12 minutes. Blaze burst out laughing. She was grinning from ear to ear and could just imagine pandemonium at the network, as Susie burbled incoherently, paddling desperately to cover what had happened, and they cut to commercial. During the break, Blaze tried to explain to Simon that he had just seen television history at its best. Blaze was thrilled at Susie's monumental stupidity, and even more so when the First Lady did not return to the set after the break. There had obviously been a rapid conference with Charlie and maybe even Zach, and Susie made a brief statement about how sorry she was to have offended the First Lady, and how grateful she was for the interview, while she looked like she was about to cry. they cut to commercial again, and then acted as though the interview had run its expected amount of time, which was not the case. It was supposed to run an hour. And the next thing Blaze saw was a taped interview she had done the previous week with the granddaughter of Bobby Kennedy, who was running for a congressional seat in Massachusetts and was said to be a presidential hopeful. She was a terrific young woman, and with enough commercials they managed to fill the hour. And unexpectedly, with the taped Kennedy piece not yet aired, Blaze had saved the day. Her star in the network heavens was assured, and Charlie called her at the end of the show. He sounded like he was ready to have a stroke, and Blaze managed not to laugh as Simon smiled. It had been quite an evening, and thanks to Blaze, a terrific show, though not the one they'd planned. It had been Charlie's idea to run the young Kennedy piece to fill the time and save their ass, and it had. "Holy shit, did you watch that?" Charlie asked in a shaken voice. "I damn near had a heart attack." "I loved it," Blaze admitted honestly as Charlie groaned. "You would, you bitch." And then he laughed. "I would too in your shoes. She submitted a whole different list of questions to programming and started ad-libbing on the air. You do too, but you never asked the First Lady about her husband cheating on her, even when they had, or about her gay brother." "I'll bet Zach loved it," she said evilly. "I think he'll drive Susie back to Miami himself, or her lifeless body after he kills her. Thank God we had your Kennedy piece in the can, or I'd have been on the air singing songs from The King and I or Sound of Music. Shit, Blaze, I'm too old for this job. Tonight nearly killed me." "You saved our ass," he said again with fervor. "I hope Zach gets that," she said seriously. But they both knew that the First Lady walking out on Susie's interview would be top of the news the next day, and all over YouTube on the internet for months to come. Susie Q had committed a cardinal sin that had ended her career. "Thou shalt not cause a First Lady to walk off the set." "Tomorrow should be fun at work for a change," Blaze said gleefully. "For you, maybe. If I hadn't had that piece of yours to run, my ass would be out the door, too. Zach must have called me 15 times. Don't worry. The ratings will be through the roof on this." He knew she was right. The ratings loved television disasters. "So is my blood pressure," he said mournfully. And a few minutes later, they hung up. Mark called her after that, and he was thrilled for her. Susie Q was history, and Blaze was safe. She and Simon talked about it for hours afterward, and Salima came in to comment. She couldn't believe what she'd heard, nor could the entire country as they watched it replayed again and again. It was breaking news. Blaze managed to look serious and dignified the next day at work, although she was laughing inside. Susie appeared briefly to pack up her things and disappeared without saying goodbye. The whole station talked of nothing else, and Charlie looked like he had survived electric shock therapy. He met with Zach for an hour, who now understood that live interviews of sensitive major subjects like presidents or their wives were not a good idea, and why. Blaze went quietly about her work throughout the day, doing research in her office and offering no comment about Susie. Blaze had dodged a bullet yet again. She was in great spirits that night, telling Simon everything that had happened that day at the network when the phone rang. She could tell by the way Simon spoke that it was work-related, and it sounded important. It took her a few minutes to figure out that it was Eric, the head of the school. "What did Eric say?" Blaze asked, looking relaxed after a great day at work. It had been a total victory for her, and her first stress-free day in months. The heat would be on her again sooner or later, but for now she had a major reprieve that would last a while. Until the next Susie Quentin came along. Simon's face was pale when he answered her question. "They're reopening next Monday. I have to go back this weekend." He looked devastated. "So soon?" She felt like she'd been punched in the stomach and was suddenly panicked. Her joy over Susie Q's demise was short-lived. "You're going back?" She had been hoping he'd stay in New York with her and Salima. It was what Salima wanted, too.
Blaze knew he had a contract he had to honor, but she hadn't wanted to think about his leaving, and hoped they could figure out something so he could stay, or come back very quickly.
"I have to," he said simply. "My contract doesn't end till May.
What about Salima?"
"She wants to stay here, and she was hoping you'd stay with us."
"I can't," he said, looking miserable. And Blaze was thinking it would be a long time till he returned in May. And now Salima wouldn't be at the school, so she had no excuse to go up there to see him. She wished there was some way for Simon to stay, but knew there wasn't.
"I'm going to miss you," she said sadly, as his eyes met hers.
"It's more complicated than that," Simon said slowly.
"How's that?"
She could see something more in his eyes, but she didn't know what it was.
"I didn't want to tell you and ruin Christmas." He swallowed before he spoke again. He could hardly get the words out.
"Megan left her husband on Christmas Day. She finally did it." Blaze nearly felt her heart stop at his words.
"What does that mean for us?"
Blaze held her breath as she waited for his answer.
"I don't know yet," he said honestly.
"I want to see her when I go back and talk about it. I have to finish it cleanly and figure out what I'm doing."
"I thought we knew what we were doing," she said with a devastated expression. She had trusted him and given him her heart, and now he no longer sounded sure.
"I love you, Blaze, but I spent 3 years waiting for her to do this. She did it for me. I have a responsibility here to her and her children." He looked agonized as he said it, and Blaze as if he'd hit her.
"And she wants to have your baby, of course,"
Blaze said with sudden irony in her voice. It was a tone he'd never heard her use, of defeat and bitterness. She could already see what was going to happen. He would go back to Meg, marry her, and have kids. She knew it was what she should have expected him to do at his age. But neither of them had believed that Meg would finally get free, after 3 years of empty promises. Her husband had finally crossed the line once too often, and her fear of losing Simon forever had given her the courage she'd never had before.
"Do you love her?"
Blaze asked him in a pained tone. She had expected better than this from him, or hoped for it at least. He had been so sure that he wanted a life with Blaze, no matter how unusual, and he had convinced her. But there was no fighting the fact that he still had feelings for Megan. He had waited 3 years for her, and she had been everything he wanted then. Now, torn between two women, he was confused.
"I just need to figure this out," he said with a look of desperation. "I don't want to lose you. I love you."
She could see that he meant it. But as he had said, it was complicated. She could see now that he didn't want to lose Meg either. He wasn't ready. He had waited so long for this, and she had finally left her husband.
"And what am I supposed to do here in the meantime?"
He was going back to school, and now possibly to Megan. Blaze felt as though her life had just fallen apart. Her situation at the network was secure, and now her love life was disintegrating. Again, it had come apart in an instant.
"Give me the time I need to figure out what I'm going to do with my life and end it cleanly with Meg. If it's right for me to be with you, I need some time to sort this out."
"I thought we already knew that it's right for us," she said unhappily. But now nothing was clear, and Simon looked confused. He had known about Megan leaving her husband since Christmas, and his confusion was the difference between being 32 and being 47. Blaze knew what she wanted now, but he was torn.
"What do I do with Salima if you have to leave this weekend?"
She had to deal with the practical aspects too now. She had no one to help her, and she was going to Lebanon for 2 days the following week. But the real problem was not Salima. It was them. "Eric thought I'd be bringing her with me. I'll talk to him about it tomorrow." It was the least of their problems. Blaze couldn't believe what had just happened. Not only was he leaving almost immediately, but Megan was suddenly front and center again,
She was angry he hadn't told her sooner. She sat looking at him for a long moment and said nothing. There were tears bulging in her eyes, but she didn't want him to see her crying. She refused to be pathetic. She was too proud to beg him to choose her, and she knew she couldn't. He had to make the decision on his own and follow his heart wherever it led him. "Let me see if I understand this clearly," she said, sounding like the woman he saw on television, not the woman he had come to love. "You want time to talk to Meg, and figure out if you still love her, and who you want to spend your life with. Does that pretty much sum it up? And during that time, you'd like me to wait here, hoping that you pick me, with no idea of what you're going to do." "I don't know what else to do," he said, looking acutely unhappy. He hated hurting her, but he didn't want to make a mistake. He had to be sure he was making the right decision. "I never thought she'd leave him. I honestly thought it was over, Blaze. I swear. She rocked my world when she told me she left him, and she did it for me." "What if she's lying to you again, or to him? Or what if she goes back to him after you lose me?" She was trying to be calm, but all she wanted to do was lie on the floor and scream. How could she have done this to herself again? She realized now that they had gotten involved prematurely. He wasn't ready, and maybe he never would be, or he'd wind up marrying Megan. She felt like a total loser. "I don't want to lose you," he said clearly again. "I'm in love with you, Blaze." But he had 3 years of history with Megan, a sense of responsibility to her, and the possibility of having a baby, none of which he had with Blaze. And their relationship was brand new. "I think that's the same thing Andrew said when I left him, that he loved me and didn't want to lose me," Blaze said coldly. And Simon could see clearly just how hurt she was, and he hated being the one to do it this time. "You can't have it both ways, at least not for long. Go figure out what you want," she said, and stood up, but she didn't approach him. "And I've got some serious thinking to do in the meantime. Maybe 15 years really does make a difference. You have a right to be with the woman you want, Simon. I was just hoping that woman was me. Apparently that's not the case." "I don't know that. I don't know anything right now. I'm confused. She threw me a curve here. She left him after I told her it was over. She sounds like a prime manipulator to me." That was one thing Blaze wasn't, and he knew that. He didn't blame her for being upset or even angry with him, but he couldn't tell her something he didn't know for sure. He knew he needed to see Meg again and clear the air before he could go any further with Blaze. It wasn't finished with Megan. "You talked to Andrew for 4 years after it was over," he reminded her gently. "You still do. You said it was unfinished business. So is this for me. I need to see her and either cut the cord completely or make it work. I don't want to wonder about this in 5 or 10 years. I need to know that this is where I want to be, with you. You lead a big life, Blaze. You're a big person. You have a gigantic career. And if we're together, we're going to be in the press. You have Salima. I have to figure out if I'm big enough to take this on, and that I can bring enough to the table. And part of that is knowing if Meg is past history for me, or if there's something left. I can't come to you cleanly until I know where I stand with her." "That all makes sense," Blaze said quietly, feeling as though her heart had turned to stone inside her. "I just don't want to live through that. I've been there. It's not a good situation for me." And she thought it unlikely that he'd choose a woman 15 years older instead of one his own age. She was fighting a losing battle, and she knew it. And she'd rather bow out gracefully than wait for him to reject her later. She didn't feel like she could win against Megan. She was 16 years younger, and willing to have kids. And he had loved her for 3 years. "I'm sorry to do this to you. You don't deserve it," he said miserably. "No, I don't," she agreed with him. "And neither do you. You deserve to be with a woman who really loves you. Just make sure she does before you take on a woman who lied to everyone for 3 years and has 3 kids by someone else.
That doesn't sound like a good situation to me. I've never been happier in my life than I've been with you for the past 3 months. I wanted it to go on forever. He looked heartbroken as he said it, and so did she.
So did I. I was beginning to think it would. I thought we had it all figured out,
but I guess we didn't. She had already resigned herself to the idea that he was going back to Meg. She was sure he would, and stay there. He had been loyal to Meg for 3 years before he left, to the point of obsession. How could she compete with that? And their relationship was healthy and sane despite the age difference, not obsessed. And then she thought of something.
If you're really leaving and planning to work it out with Meg, don't wait until the weekend. Have Eric send someone immediately. I don't want to drag this out any longer than we have to. If you're going to break my heart, and that appears to be the plan, make it quick. Don't linger. It'll just make it worse for both of us.
And particularly for her. He had someone else waiting for him. She didn't. And knowing that Megan was back in his life was agony for her.
Blaze, I told you I need time. I'm not telling you I'm going back to her for sure. I need to see her and be sure of what I want. If I didn't do that, it wouldn't be fair to you or to me.
I understand. I'm just not as optimistic as you are. And to be honest, this is humiliating. I don't want to stand around while you figure it out, sample the merchandise, and decide who you love better. I have to compete every day at work and fight for my life. I don't want to do that with you, too. If you're unclear enough to want to check it out with her again, I doubt very much that you'll be coming back to me. And you probably shouldn't. She can offer you a much more normal situation, with a house full of kids, hers and your own. That's pretty hard to resist, particularly at your age. All I can offer you is my very grown-up life and Salima.
I love you both, you and Salima.
He looked honest as he said it.
I'm grateful for everything you did for us for the past 3 months. It was amazing, particularly for Salima, and for me too, she said sadly. She had never been as happy in her life, and now she had to pay the piper. She had been a fool to think their ages didn't make a difference, and she knew it. They did. She was trying to be reasonable, but she was hurt and angry and sounded bitter.
I'll call Eric in the morning, he said quietly, and stood up to go back to his room. He wanted to spend the night with her, now more than ever, but he sensed that she wouldn't let him. She didn't say another word to him and walked back to her suite. And when she got there, she lay on the bed and sobbed. Her worst fears had just come true.
Chapter 13. The 2 days after Eric's call telling Simon the school was reopening were a blur for both Simon and Blaze. He continued keeping Salima busy. They were on a museum binge, and had been to 3 in the past week, while Simon explained both the visual and historical aspects of the shows to her. Salima loved it, and he had taken her to the Lighthouse for the Blind, too, and 2 concerts in the evening. But his mind was somewhere else. Several times, Salima had to press him to get an answer to a question. His mind kept drifting as he thought of the situation he was in.
"Is something wrong?" she asked him finally as they left the Whitney.
He hadn't told her yet that he was leaving for Caldwell that Sunday, or sooner if Eric sent his replacement. Blaze wanted to break the news to Salima herself. She knew how much Salima would miss him. Her life under Simon's care had been totally transformed. She had grown up in a mere 3 months. He had worked magic, and with Blaze as well. He made everything better for each of them, and had brought both women out of their shell. When Blaze had talked to Simon about it, she told him he wasn't an enabler, but an enhancer. It was an apt description of him.
"Are you sick?"
Salima put a hand on his forehead to check for fever, and he grinned. He had just hailed a taxi for them, but usually they took the bus or subway. They were going to Zabar's to pick up food he needed for dinner. If nothing else, he thought he could feed them decently until he left. Blaze was no longer willing to let him do much more than that, except take care of Salima. Blaze had skipped dinner and gone straight to her room the night before, claiming she had a headache. But Simon knew better. Her heart was aching, not her head, and he felt guilty for it. He had been honest with her about how confused he was after Megan finally came through after all this time, claiming she had done it for him. She made a major point of telling him she had left her husband for him, and he couldn't abandon her now. He had to at least give her a chance. He felt he had no other choice. He wanted to be fair to both women and himself, but inevitably one of them was going to get hurt. Or maybe they all would. "I'm fine. I was just thinking about Caldwell," he said, which was partially true. But he'd really been thinking about Megan. "I'm going to have to go back soon," he tried to warn her, without letting the cat out of the bag, that he'd be leaving on Sunday. He thought Blaze was wrong not to tell her sooner. She wanted to find his replacement first, and then she would drop the bomb. "I want you to stay here with us. Who cares about your contract?" Salima said, pouting. "The Board of Trustees," he said with a rueful grin, as they got out at Zabar's, the West Side delicatessen and delicacy shop he had discovered when he first got to New York. He went there often to buy the things they liked, and Salima liked going with him. She loved the hearty food smells of the shop. "Even if I decide not to renew my contract, I have to finish out the school year." He already had applications to the two best schools for the blind in New York sitting on his desk, and planned to complete both before he left. He'd already sent one back to the Perkins School in Massachusetts. "You've got to finish what you start in life," he said cryptically to Salima, as he selected two of Blaze's favorite cheeses and asked for a thick slab of foie gras. But he didn't think that foie gras was going to soothe Blaze's aching heart, or his own. He hated to leave her, but he knew that if he turned his back on Megan now, he would always wonder what might have happened. He had waited for her to leave her husband for so long. Blaze was a much more exciting woman and a better person, but Megan was the kind of girl he'd always thought he'd wanted. And now she said she wanted a baby with him. Just one, since she already had three, but she was suggesting they get married as soon as her divorce came through and get pregnant as soon as possible. He knew that the life he'd have with her would be completely different from the one he'd shared with Blaze. He loved his life with Blaze, but was still unsure what he could contribute to it and felt inadequate and overwhelmed at times. He had never expected someone like Blaze to come along. She was a star and such a huge success. What could he give her? That had haunted him since the beginning. She claimed that all she wanted from him was love, but he wanted to give her more, and he couldn't. Materially, he had nothing to offer, no matter how fancy his mother's family was. Some of that would be his one day, but for now he had nothing. He was an underpaid teacher, and their relationship was still so new. It was hard to commit his future to a woman he had known and loved for 3 months. With Megan, it had been 3 years, albeit disappointing ones. But now that she'd left her husband, it would be different. Or at least he hoped so. And they wouldn't have to meet in cheap motels. But when he thought of Blaze and how much he loved her, he was totally confused. Each woman offered him a different life and world. His head was spinning. "I think you're sick," Salima said as they wandered aimlessly through Zabar's among the pungent smells, and Simon kept forgetting what he needed. He wanted truffle oil for Blaze's favorite pizza, if she'd eat it. His cooking for her was an expression of his love, too, and it seemed like the least he could do. When they got back to the apartment, Blaze was home from work, in her office, working on her computer. She had come home early. For once, all was peaceful at the network, now that Susie had left, but her personal life was a disaster. She glanced up as Simon walked into the room and set a cup of French vanilla tea down on her desk. She smiled as she thanked him. But the atmosphere between them now was cool, and the look in Blaze's eyes said, "Don't come near me."